and on ABC Radio and on your pod. You're with me, Noel Debien, on The Good Life. Well, May 23rd marks a special day for Baha'is. It's their foundation day. They call it the Declaration of the Bab, the Bab being the man who predicted the coming of Baha'u'llah. The Baha'is are an independent world religion that was founded back in 1844 in Iran, and they say that their central theme is that humanity is one family and that the time has come for its unification into a peaceful global society. Well, those Baha'is count about 17,000 in Australia, and a significant number of those fled here as refugees after the Islamic Revolution of 1979. When Ayatollah Khomeini came into power in Iran, the Baha'is there were placed under great pressure. Well, those Baha'is still left in Iran now suffer intense persecution. And on this festival day, in The Good Life, we turn our attention to the Baha'is of both Australia and Iran.
I'm Natalie Mobini. I'm the Director of External Affairs for the Australian Baha'i Community.
I'm Venus Kalesi. I'm the Director of Public Information for the Australian Baha'i Community.
And I'm Mirzad Mamtahan, and I'm nephew of Sayed Rezai, my uncle, who's been in prison in Iran for the last 3 years.
And each of you are here, of course, on The Good Life to contribute just a little bit of a very complicated story about Baha'is. It is the declaration of the Bab on this day. The Declaration of the Bab. Unpack that for us, Venus.
Sure. The Bab was a messenger of God.
A person, a human being.
A human being.
Yeah.
Who came to tell humanity about the coming of the Promised One, whom Baha'is believe to be Baha'u'llah. The same way John the Baptist prepared for the coming of Jesus Christ. But the Bab was an independent messenger with a religion, teachings and followers.
What year are we talking about here?
The Bab declared that he was a messenger on the 23rd of May in 1844 in Shiraz in Iran.
Shiraz, where the grapes come from.
That's right.
How will Baha'is around the world mark this day, the Declaration of the Bab?
Baha'i communities celebrate the Declaration of the Bab through a variety of ways. It's always marked by a joyful occasion, and local communities often get together, read some of the prayers of the Bab, reflect on the history.
Food?
Food is always involved, yes. In my community, I'm from Strathfield in Sydney. Last year, we got together and had a potluck dinner. We played games, definitely read some prayers and reflected on the history as well. That's always really a festive, joyous occasion.
Now, this is a Shiite Muslim society, isn't it? And the Shiites are that division of Islam that believe in the imams, these teachers or holy teachers who are, and they're twelvers or they're seveners. There's two different versions of it. But they are waiting still in Iran for the person they call the Mahdi, which is this mystical last imam. However, the Baha'is actually believe that the Bab came to say that the Mahdi was coming. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that the Promised One was coming, the Promised One that all the religions of the world were awaiting for.
So in a sense, if you wanted to construe it this way, and if I was an Iranian Muslim, I could say, with some reasonableness, well, you're like Muslims who believe the Messiah has already come, and we're still waiting, and that's why we don't like you.
In a way, yes. It's always a challenge for religions to accept the coming of the next messenger, the next prophet. And throughout time, throughout the history of religions, we see that every manifestation of God has, or messenger, has gone through persecution by the previous followers of that religion.
Now, Natalie, you were frowning slightly, though, by my description, and I suspect that's because it's a little bit unfair, the way I put it, in that if I were to call Christians today just a sect of Judaism, it would be like that to call Baha'is a sect of Islam, I think.
Well, that's true. The Baha'i faith is an independent religion, but it did arise within an Islamic context in the same way that Christianity arose within a Jewish context.
And Mirzad, you are actually a relative of one of the key leaders of the Iranian Baha'is, the place where it all started, who's been in jail a long time now.
That's true. See, my uncle and his colleagues, they were actually representatives of the Baha'i community in Iran. After the establishment of the Islamic Republic, the Baha'i institutions, they were basically banned in Iran. So they were like an ad hoc group looking after the affairs of the community.
So after the Shah fell and the revolution happened,
that's
you,
right.
You guys got it in the neck, basically.
Well, basically, we were persecuted systematically. I mean, the Baha'is have been persecuted for over 106 years since the birth of the faith. But of course, when the Islamic revolution happened, you know, we were targeted for being minorities. And then the government actually actively started persecuting the Baha'is.
Now, you grew up there, though, didn't you? Because you moved to Australia, but
that's
you grew
right.
up. What was it like growing up there?
Well, it, very difficult times. I mean, I was about 10 or 11 years old when the revolution happened, so I have very good memory of what happened. I mean, I vividly remember when, you know, our house was attacked by the mob and we had to, you know, run away and get into the car and basically staying one night here and, you know, 1 week here. And we basically had to change places, you know, maybe 10 times.
In fear of your lives.
That's right. And until, you know, from one safe house to another safe house, basically. And at one point, we actually had to live at Shiraz Baha'i Center before it was confiscated by the government.
Natalie, the international leadership is not in Iran, though, is it? It's actually in Israel, isn't it?
That's right. The founder of the Baha'i faith, Baha'u'llah, who was originally born in Iran, was exiled from the country due to his teaching and remained a prisoner of the Ottoman regime for the remainder of his life, and was finally placed in the prison city of Acre in what was then part of Palestine and is now part of Israel. He passed away there in 1892 and was buried there, and his shrine is now a holy place for Baha'is around the world, and therefore the world centre of our faith has grown up in that location.
So let me just run over that again. So the Bab is the precursor, like the John the Baptist, mm-hmm. but also the Mahdi is the mm-hmm. mystical one.
Mm-hmm. Baha'i see Baha'u'llah as the fulfillment not only of Islamic prophecy, but of the prophecies that are contained in other religions as well, for one who would return and bring peace to the world.
And it's not consciously Islamic at all, though. I mean, the buildings might have a vaguely Eastern appearance, but women are not in head covering. There's nothing much to remind me of Islam in it when I visit Baha'is.
No. I guess Islam is the closest cousin, because yeah. we believe that all of the religions have been progressively revealed by God to humanity. And Islam, I guess, as the most recent, might have certain common elements with our faith, like, for example, the fact that we have an annual fasting month.
Mm-hmm.
But all of them are considered to be teaching the same fundamental spiritual truths.
Belief in one God.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd read the Quran sometimes in your services?
Yes, there are Baha'i scriptures, but we also recognise that the scriptures of the other great religions, which include Islam and Christianity and Judaism, but also Buddhism and Hinduism, we recognise all of those as being sacred scriptures, which are read in services alongside our Baha'i scriptures.
Now, that being said, that there's been this internationalising and there's a new centre in Israel of the leadership, the Iranian Persian originals are still there, aren't they? And have been ever since the foundation 140-odd years ago and somehow held on.
Well, that's true. I mean, there are still a lot of Baha'is in Iran. In fact, it's the second largest faith community in Iran. It's their country. I mean, they're Iranians. They love their country. They want to live there. I mean, they have no intention of leaving. I mean, I had to leave, unfortunately, due to severe persecution, being, you know, expelled from school and losing everything that we had. But, you know, I still have family members who are in Iran. They're happy to live there, but they want to live in peace and they want to practice their faith in peace and without persecution.
I just don't quite understand, because I see, United States leaders, international leaders, United Nations leaders, governments all over the world saying, look, you've got 7 people imprisoned. And they're charged with being spies, aren't they? This is what they're charged
That's
with.
That's right.
And your uncle is one of these 7.
That's right.
Why is nothing happening? Why has nothing changed in all these years?
Well, look, I mean, I really don't know the answer to that. I mean, the international community, I think, has been active in some ways defending the rights of the Baha'is. I know that things have happened. I wouldn't say nothing has happened, but we're hopeful that more will be done, because, they're innocent people and they're basically purely persecuted based on their beliefs and nothing else. So all these sort of accusations of being spies and things, they're just ridiculous, basically. I mean, there's no basis to that. The Iranian government has never provided any sort of proof. never been able to provide anything. And, you know, it's basically persecution based on belief and nothing else.
How much contact have you had with your uncle since he was first arrested and taken in?
We received 2 phone calls from him a few months ago while he was being transferred from one prison to another.
You know he's alive then?
That's right. So during that time, we were basically, you know, lucky enough to receive phone calls from him while they had access to a public phone. We don't have that anymore because they've been moved to a much harsher part of the prison at this stage, and they have basically had no access to anything like that at all. But we know from the last time when he called us that, you know, he's in very ill health. We know that he requires surgery, immediate surgery, because of the sort of the mistreatments and the conditions that he and his colleagues have been basically in for the last 3 years.
Are you saying they've been brutalized as well?
Well, look, I mean, I you know, I'm guessing that's probably the case. I know that they have been threatened by inmates and by prison guards. I know that they have been mistreated. I wouldn't know the exact details of it, but one can only imagine the conditions that they're in.
On the subject of what's happened over the last 3 years, Noel, it is worth noting that in the early years of the revolution, in the early 1980s, the members of the Baha'i National Leadership at that time were arrested as well in raids and were never heard of again. A second leadership body was elected and the members of it were again arrested and were executed. So what has happened over the last 3 years with the international pressure is that we know they're still alive.
They've been kept alive effectively through international protest, perhaps.
Yes, that's what I believe, that the scrutiny of the world has been crucial in making sure that their treatment was not worse than it would otherwise have been.
For those of us who've not been to Iran, not been inside Persia, why is a community which in, you know, Australia we see as entirely peaceful, parents want to send their kids to Baha'i scripture in public schools because they think it's a tolerant sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Why are Baha'is getting it? Why is it such a problem, do you think, Natalie?
Well, there's a long history, as we said, to the persecution going back to the early days of the faith. But at the present time, what we have is a very fundamentalist regime, I suppose, and it comes down to sheer religious persecution of a group which is considered to fall outside the prevailing religious orthodoxy.
In the same way that Christians in Egypt experience extreme difficulty with militant Muslim groups, this is the same thing that's happening in Iran.
Well, in Iran, it's precisely those groups who are in control of government and have put in place a very systematic, documented strategy which is aimed at eradicating the Baha'i community from the country.
What more can be done? If people are listening now and they say, I want to do something, is there anything more can be done by an individual listening in Australia?
I think it's really important that the Iranian government is continually reminded that people around the world are concerned for the situation of the Baha'is. And we advocate very strongly as members of the Australian Baha'i community for our brothers and sisters in faith. But it's even more powerful when that advocacy comes from those who aren't Baha'is, who have never met these people, but are concerned at what is an obvious violation of Iran's responsibility to protect the right to freedom of religion in its country. So people can write to the authorities. There are a lot of human rights organisations that have very actively supported the case of the Baha'is. The United Nations, as you've said, has passed resolution after resolution, and that scrutiny continues to be there so that the world is bearing witness, at least, to what is happening.
Natalie Mirzad Venus, thanks for being part of The Good Life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.